If particulars were part of the universal, then universal would be sum of all the particulars put together, that is the universal. But that is not the case. Universal is not the sum of all the particulars put together. If you have an orange, the whole of the orange, what is the whole of the orange? It is sum of the parts. All the parts of the orange put together is the whole of the orange. But if the whole of orange is more than the sum of its parts, then it means that there is something which is universal, which does not consist of the parts. You will see that these words universal and particular are very difficult words. We speak of them very normally in general. There is a vague idea in us, but when we analyze, you can see how intricate is the idea. Is universal constituted of particulars? It looks, but according to Plato, particulars are not parts of the universal. Particulars are not manifestations of the universals. Now let us make a third round of incubation. We had the first round of incubation, second round of incubation, now we come to the third round of incubation. The same ideas we repeat in different ways. You know, in India we have a word called manana, M-A-N-A-N-A, manana. Manana means reflection. But then there is a further movement which is called nididhyasana, N-I-D-I-D-H-Y-A-S-A-N-A, nididhyasana. Nididhyasana is reflecting again and again and again and again and still again and yet again and further again. That is called nididhyasana. You go on reflecting and reflecting and reflecting and reflecting. Now this is the substance I give you now for further reflection, further incubation. If the particular does not constitute the universal, this is the first question, first statement. If particulars do not constitute the universals, if particulars are not manifestations of the universals, in what way can they be called copies? If they have no relationship at all, then what is the copy? How is it? It is exactly like the universal. This is our third meditation on the same subject. You know, there are many saints who have written meditations. First meditation, second meditation, third meditation, fourth, fifth, 50th, like that. This is a subject on which you can have many meditations. So this is the third meditation I am giving you. You have, if universals are not constituted of the particulars, I am only repeating now, if universals are not constituted of the particulars, and if particulars are not the manifestations of the universals, in what way can they be called copies of the universals? According to Plato, particulars are copies of universals, but not manifestations of universals. Nor are the particulars parts of universals. This is exactly the statement of Plato. Particulars are copies of universal, but not the manifestations of universals, and they do not constitute the parts of universals. These three statements to put together is a theory of Plato. Therefore the question is, what is the meaning of a copy? Copy is neither the manifestation nor a part of the origin. What is it then? His answer is, they are copies. His answer, they are copies. By copy he means neither the manifestation nor that which constitutes a part of the origin. That's the meaning of a copy. Now you can continue this incubation again and again. But I give you one more proposition. And this was the proposition made by his own disciple, Plato's own disciple. Aristotle differed from his master. He did not agree with Plato. And there's a famous sentence of him when he disagreed with his master. He said, Plato is dear, but truth is dearer. Plato is dear, but truth is dearer. You know, this statement gives you a tremendous freedom from human influence. You may love somebody very dearly, but in your search of the truth, you should not allow the human influence to cloud you. You should feel liberated. You should be able to see truth in itself as it is, not as you like it, not as somebody else likes it, or a third person likes it. You look at truth in its own face. You may not succeed. That's another matter. By coming out of one influence, you may go on another influence. That also is possible. You can say, I don't want this influence, but then you are influenced by somebody else. To face the truth as it is a very difficult process. Because normally we have this influence, that influence, that influence. We cannot come out of this influence and go into another influence. We come out of that influence and go into a third influence. So you should say to everyone, you are dear, but truth is dearer. To every influence you should say, you are dear, but truth is dearer. And apply this principle until you really feel that you have come straight, face to face, the truth, as it is, as it is. Now whether Aristotle succeeded in doing so or not is a different question. But he tried to come out of the influence of Plato and he argued, universals, he said, are always in particulars. Universals are always in particulars. What does it mean? It's a new incubation now. Universals are always in particulars. According to him, universals cannot subsist but in particulars. Now when we come to Aristotle, we shall discuss this whole theory once again. Present, our incubation will stop here. By stopping here, it means that we are free not to follow Plato, because already his own disciple disagreed with him. There is something in this whole statement of Plato which doesn't seem to click absolutely accurately. There is something in it which is not complete, which is not adequate. But when something is not adequate, you must be able to state what it is. Although it is not adequate, you must be able to state accurately what it says. So once again we state the whole theory. Particulars are copies of universals. Full stop. Particulars are not manifestations of universals. And thirdly, universals are not made of particulars. Universals are not made of particulars. These three statements we should be able to state clearly. When you read philosophy, there is one word which you must remember: exposition. Exposition is expounding accurately, expounding, E-X-P-O-U-N-D-I-N-G, expounding accurately what is contended. What is contended? Exposition is to state accurately is to report accurately what is said. Somebody writes to him a letter, it's a long letter, in which he says many things. Then you ask me, what has he written in the letter? If I say, oh, nothing, rubbish, this is not exposition. This is what is called comment. It's a comment on what is written. You say, oh, nothing, is rubbish. You are not expounding. Expounding is to say accurately what is said in the letter. When you say it's rubbish, it's a comment on it. You are not expounding. Oh, don't bother, it is nothing. There's a comment. Oh, it's beautiful. Wonderful, what he has written is wonderful, but it's not exposition. It's a comment. A philosopher is one who is able to describe or... If Plato says something, you should be able to expound accurately what he has said. Comment comes afterwards. You always make a distinction between exposition and comment. Those who are not trained in philosophy, you will find they mix up the two things. Exposition and comment, they mix up the two things together. There's a mark that he has not a philosophical training. If I take your interview after 1 year, and if I find that you are mixing up exposition and comment, I'll find you have not been trained properly. So next time, after 1 year, when you meet me, be very careful. When I say something, I said, you, what does Plato say? First, you should be able to say accurately what Plato has said. You should be able to say these three statements quite clearly. Whether they are right, wrong, that is a different matter. Even his disciple differed from him. Even his disciple may be wrong in differing from him. That is also quite possible. So whether Plato was right or Aristotle was right, it's a different question. It's a comment. You should be able to make exactly what Plato has said. And try to understand exactly what he says. You can expound properly only when you have tried your utmost to understand what he says. That is why I am giving you this training. If anybody says, what is Plato's theory of the universals? You may write anything, but if you don't write these three statements accurately, it means you have not expounded Plato. According to Plato, particulars are copies of the universals. Particulars are not manifestations of the universals. Universals are not constituted of the particulars. These three statements, when you make, that is an exposition of Platonic philosophy of the universal. Now, in order to make his exposition complete, you must add two more sentences, which you have not read today, but we read yesterday. Universals are permanent and they are self-existent. Now, the word self-existent is a very important word in philosophy. Self-existent is that which exists in itself and it is the cause of itself. It is the cause of itself. In Latin it is called sui generis, S-U-I, sui generis, G-E-N-E-R-I-S. It is caused by itself. Sui means itself, generis means caused by. Caused by itself, not produced from something else. So universals, according to Plato, are not caused by something else. In other words, they are ultimate. The words cause of itself, self-existent and ultimate have the same meaning. Finally, universals are not perceived, but they are conceived. Universals are not perceived, but conceived. Finally, that which is perceived is not knowledge. Only that which is conceived is knowledge. Therefore, universals are the objects of knowledge. And the faculty by which you can conceive universals is called reason. Reason is the faculty by which universals are conceived. Good stop. Now tomorrow I shall ask you to expound Plato to me. So far, there is much to be expounded, but this much. What you have learned of Plato so far is this much. These statements, if you can make to me accurately, I'll say you have done a good exposition. I'm not asking your comments as yet. Comments later on. First, expound. Thank you.